Good evening, this is Mark Litch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Kristen Hirsch, writer, solo artist, founding member of the bands Throwing Muses and 50 Foot Wave, and we're talking about her latest book, Seeing Sideways, a memoir of music and motherhood. Kristen, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you about this book.
Thank you for having me.
I was amazed when I picked this book up. I cover a lot of music memoirs, and all the interesting stuff about, you know, what you want to read about their adventures and stuff like that is there. But generally, it's a pretty, you know, typical sort of pedestrian writing, I guess is what I want to say. I was unprepared.
That's what I would have said. I'm glad you said it for me.
All I want to say is I want to sort of alert people. If you think this is going to be that kind of book, you said, I'm just going to read this like at the beach or something like that, you actually can write.
See, I've only heard that as a negative, you know. There are pros and cons to having written actual books. My new book, Seeing Sideways, is the sequel to Rat Girl. And the cover shows what I'm like, which is I'm pretty pedestrian as a person.
However, when you put pen to paper, something else happens.
Well, because aesthetics are aesthetics are aesthetics. So I learned from music, and prose to me must be musical. It has to engage in melody and rhythm and impressionism, and it has to have its own voice. If I were controlling it, it would be as boring as I am.
Well, after actually having read this, that was just, you're obviously not boring. I just have to say that. I have to put that out there.
Well, you
live the life. I'm actually lucky. I feel lucky to stalking you, and you're still alive.
Life isn't boring. I would like to be boring because I would be more suited to it. But the adventure has not stopped. And in fact, I wrote a book about Vic Chestnut in the interim. And that was a nice break, even though that was its own kind of adventure. The year that Rat Girl encompasses is a kind of a volition in and of itself toward what was going to happen next. And Vic was a decade after that. But this book, the new one, encompasses 30 years. And so I was able to edit out anything boring.
Okay.
And it is exhausting. If you think Rat Girl tired you out, this makes it look like I've been living on a roller coaster for 30 years. But as you say, it's not written like a normal memoir. So they're literally.
Well, let's say normal. Let's not make a judgment. Let's say usual.
Okay, typical. Yeah.
Typical. At times it reads like I'm reading William Burroughs or Thomas Pynchon.
Yeah, and you know, some of the responses to this have just been like, I have absolutely no idea what's going on. Well, it's like, that's the point. I didn't either.
Well, especially the first section is positively oneric. It's pretty amazing. You can tell what's going on. Yeah, but
well,
I want to talk to you. Am I supposed to be able to? Did I dream that I understood it?
I just don't think you should ever pretend that you know what's going on. I mean, duh.
Yeah.
Who do you think is in charge here? It's not going to be you.
Kristen. That's like what what's his name said about quantum physics, that anybody that tells you that they understand quantum physics does not understand quantum physics.
You really have to approach every moment with a clear-eyed, I don't know.
Yep.
And don't come away with any more than that there's another moment where you don't know. And the impressions that you build up will become your selfhood. But other than that, you'd just be following a brain around, and that's not going to lead you anywhere good. It's good to have a facile mind, but only if it's following life itself and your experiences within.
Was there any difference between writing this book and when you write your music? And I know writing your music is a very unique experience for you. and it has been, and it's wrapped up with things like synesthesia and stuff like that. But was writing the book any different, or was it just an extension of that same kind of creative process?
It was very different at first, and it sucked. But because when Penguin bought Rat Girl, it didn't exist yet. They read an early draft, and they just wanted my name on a book. Probably thought typical memoir, and I didn't want to do something that sucked, so I did something that sucked in a different way. It was clever, and I really, really hate clever. Yep. So I knew I had to fight through that, and unfortunately it was mired in how my bandmates and I speak, which can sound clever on the page, but I had to tell the truth. And eventually I pulled out anything impressive from the writing so that it was a piece that could help some kid with a passion. That's it. Even it's not particularly musically inclined, the story itself. It's just person with passion, and the human we're talking about happens to be female, which is very difficult for people to wrap their heads around, as we know. But it's also an animal-like orientation, and that is essentially yin, if not the female win in our culture. So it is an atypical ride, but as far as the human condition goes, it isn't really. It just speaks to that. So in short, I had to write a book that was less impressive in order to be more effective.
Yep.
And with Seeing Sideways, the one that just came out a few months ago, which picks up right where this left off, essentially, it's even more of a ride because I was already in the mode of letting the book write itself. So for 5-6 years, I was waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning and time tripping and letting the book just go. So that free form sensibility, you can't let your inner child ever be in charge, even though we like innocence. I think we should probably get rid of whimsy.
I'm all for that.
Okay. So my editing process is strong. I have a strong craft at play, but the inspiration was what I was working on in the middle of the night. And it has come full circle to the point where there are ideas. There's just not a cleverness to their expression. And that, to me, is very musical. It's very similar to songs. Songs take the clarity of an idea, but they don't get mired in cerebral sensibilities. The sonic vocabulary is one of color and texture. And if I were writing prose that did not reflect that, I'd be lying, really.
This is a book that's about your sons. It's actually virtually dedicated to your sons. There's a wonderful end chapter for them. Has your sons read it?
You would have to ask them.
Okay, you didn't ask them?
I'm very polite.
Okay.
And I think it's hard for some of them.
And I get that, too. You know.
Yeah. My son, Ryder, has read it a few times. I know that because he was living in New Orleans while I was writing it. That's where I was. And he has walked me through a couple of iterations. I just like to have another ear who was there to the experience saying, yes, this is how I remember it. I had to do the same thing with some journalists because I didn't own the interviews I was printing.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of excerpts of interviews. And the funny thing is, for me, about to interview you, I was like reading these going, oh, I hope I'm not a jerk.
Oh, nobody's a jerk, really.
Trust me, Kristen, there's real jerks.
I mean in the book.
Okay, in the book. Jerks, oh, like, wait a minute. You dealing with the music business, trying to do music video, was one of the most insane sections of a very wild book. I mean,
thank you for that.
I'm surprised didn't punch them.
And you can go find it. Like, sadly, you can see all this crap on YouTube. It's like, I want my memories to be buried. But there's no such thing anymore.
I love that one of them gave you a direction, like, try to rock out more or something like that.
Oh, God. They're nightmares. Yeah, there are jerks. I just
see, that was a huge section of jerks. Yeah, there are sections of this book that are positively cinematic.
And
that was one of them. The other one was, there are several, the weird concert you played in Texas with the cow people.
Yeah. I mean,
I couldn't tell whether you were really enjoying yourself or really scared for your life.
I never fear for my life, which is.
Wow.
I know. I've had a few people say that they were disturbed by that.
It might be time.
I think when your life is threatened, you're so fully engaged in the moment that you're not really thinking that way. You're just thinking, oh, whoa.
and there's quite a number of those moments in this book.
Yeah, yeah. My problems are, I guess, fairly predictable. My issues with the book.
What?
The parts where I found that I found difficult to rewrite. And this is really literally 5 or 6 years of having to relive. I couldn't bear when my son was in the hospital.
Yes,
that section. Those moments are the ones where I feel like I'm not going to live just past the next paragraph. But seeing the music business in it's a circle of hell. If you if you care about women or music at all, and having to face the fact that, well, being born female is not inherently a feminist act. These women knock each other down to objectify themselves, and we call that a cultural win, this narcissism, this dehumanizing of one whole gender, like just to be heard playing Juicy Fruit commercials. Like, music belongs nowhere near the music business. So if I were questioning that in any way, I would not be who I am. My convictions were formed in dire straits in cartoonish environments.
I'm surprised you were as patient as you were, at least as it seemed in the book, although you weren't that patient. But I mean, that was, like I said, it was a cinematic narrative right there.
And this is why I don't name anybody for all the reasons.
Well, you name your sons, Dooney, Ryder, Wyatt, and Bodie.
Because I hate the concept of big names. They will unapologetically use that term. Big name. Imagine one human being more important than another. And this is what is a given when you bring your prayer to people. There's someone standing in the way saying, some humans are more important than others. We call this status. If you aren't a narcissist, you fail. If you aren't lying, you fail. So, yeah, there's all that ugly, but you can pull so much out of it just by not using names. And yet, I'm a mother. I'm going to get all this Buddhism wrong for these four human beings who are my responsibility and my heart, and I will name them, and I'm going to say they're more important than other people.
That's exactly what happens in the book. That's what happens, just sort of, it sort of seeps in. But
I think it's easy to figure out who Conan O'Brien is, maybe.
Yeah, that's who I...
so great in the book that's fine. Spin Magazine I didn't name because they were horrible.
Oh, my God. There's a quote from you. I can't say it completely on the air, but they can have the effing music. I quit everything but the music.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was said out of just total... I mean, I so identified with what we were going through. Like,
oh, thank you.
Crap.
They got everything. They took everything, and that's. Yep. But really, they took recordings and they took money, and I have the songs. I mean, you can't take music. You can take recorded music, and you can take money. And yeah, we ended up living in our truck, but that's life. You know, that's an honor too, to have continued to not be safe psychologically, financially. The only safety is those four human beings looking at me saying, We are your Buddhist bell. Ding, ding, ding. Here's life right in front of you. And if music is not up to that task, then don't call yourself a musician.
I want to ask you about how you remembered all of this. Did you ever do things in journals or write any notes to yourself? Did you just recall all of this?
I have journals in my song notebooks, and I have witnesses.
Sworn witnesses.
It's really weird. There are always people around, if you'll notice.
Oh, yeah.
And I left out, I would say, as many wild stories.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
I know. Life is crazy.
Well, you embrace the crazy. I mean, you're not. Yeah. I don't want to say you embrace it. You're comfortable with it.
I'm used to it. I'm not comfortable with it. I would like to have boring settle in. So it hasn't happened.
No,
yet,
you wouldn't. Come on.
I'm holding my breath. I don't think I would be bored. I'm so boring myself. I've just had to rise to these occasions over and over again.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is Kristen Hirsch, writer, solo artist, founding member of the bands Throwing Muses and 50 Foot Wave. And we're talking about her latest book. It is a really great read. Seeing Sideways, a memoir of music and motherhood. And I mean that the prose is worth the price of admission.
Thank you, sweetheart. That's very kind of you. It seems to upset some people.
Well, you know, like I said, well, people want just the facts and not any art. So
Yeah. And I didn't provide all the facts because they would be reductive and associative. And I wanted the story. And by the time you get to the experiential, the sweat of the story, you have left many of the facts behind for a damn good reason.
Yep. Now, you suffered from PTSD.
Yeah.
When did you first realize that's what it was that you had?
Just a few years ago, actually.
What do you think caused it?
My son being taken.
That the whole first sort of 100 pages or 75 pages of the book. Explains what you were going through. But are you now out of it?
It has moved back in time. The issue with PTSD is that any trigger could make you relive it as if it were happening now. So I lived for a good 25 years unable to accept anything that reminded me of summer or crying children, you know, anything that reminded me of that moment.
Cops on the porch. There's always a cop on the porch.
Yeah. And I've met a lot of Gulf War veterans who come to my readings for this. I'm crying while I talk about it. It's still very hard. But they have the same expression that I do. I have to admit, we have this resting fear face that can be triggered at any moment, and we fly back to the worst thing that ever happened to us. And so what happens when you're treated with at least EMDR in my case, because it wasn't me, it was about a child. It took me
It was about
longer.
A real incident that, as all PTSD is, there's a real thing, a real trauma that causes it.
And these veterans, it was, for the most part, things that happened to them.
Yep.
But for some of them were closer to my experience in that they saw or caused or were witnessing in some way involved with a horror that affected a child. And those are the ones that have really helped me because you can't fully leave it behind.
Yep.
Which was my argument even before I knew what it was. It's like something like that happens, you're forever on another trajectory. You're not on your path anymore. You've created a new universe, and you have to carry that albatross. And so I still do, but I know that it happened in the past, and I know my son is alive. And I didn't at the time.
That's right.
And so you do, a part of you freezes. But the honor in that is that how many mothers have been through that? How many hearts have been broken? You're one of them. Your empty arms reflect all of those throughout time. And the baby is the same. I hate looking at his eyes and seeing all that sadness that is still there, but I can see his eyes. And so I'm one of the lucky mothers.
That's one of the interesting things about your writing is that time does all sorts of interesting things in your writing, in the narrative. Sometimes it feels like the reader is shot out through a cannon through years.
Yeah, yeah. Time is really what this book is about, actually, removing the concept of linear time.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Engaging with the points on that very Western, I suppose, arrow, but not even the circular Eastern arrow, the point on the time, the density that is the infinity, the vertical infinity on your lifeline. And it's the only safe way to engage if you are going to live one of these human messes, and very few of us are allowed out of that.
Mm-hmm.
There's that Tim Buckley line that I love. Tell me of all the pain you've had and I'll never smile again. We adore that romance because we are here stuck in an organism that will face entropy, that we are here to engage with linear time. So let that break your heart a little bit. Let that play out as a little bit of empathy and some sweet sadness. And for me, that's a turquoise A minor because of synesthesia. I engage thusly, and my son Wyatt is always saying, like, don't negate the turquoise. It's here for a reason. It's not discomfort. It's true pain, which is a real, it's an entity that we engage with like all others.
I have to ask you about that Texas ostrich farm.
Mm-hmm.
Did I dream that? That I read that?
Yeah, this is what I keep asking.
I mean, that's another cinematic.
I didn't expect all the animals to appear as they did.
But, you know, when I talked to you about Rat Girl so long ago, I remember you really have an affinity for natural history and herpetology especially.
Yeah, I was a biology major, and in fact, I had to choose between a scholarship to study medicine and a recording contract, and I probably chose wrong.
I don't know. I think you made the right choice. Can you imagine if you were a doctor?
I wanted to be an immunologist, really, which is interesting.
What?
Because I think that what we really wrestle most with here is the concept of contagion and otherness. The fact that our self is misapprehended as an attempt to be self-absorbed and keep enemies out, as opposed this, you know, the human, the true human factor, which would be selfhood, and by extension, not dehumanizing others. In fact, embracing the terrain and your fingerprint as individuality. You know, Mr. Rogers saying it. You are special doesn't mean you're more special than other people.
Oh, my God, I've misread Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, exactly. It means, like everyone, you are special. Now rise to this idiosyncratic occasion and stop imitating and being part of the marketplace. It's a really, you know, the subjective experience is valuable, but not if you think it's bigger than others.
Now, are you precognitive in some ways? Because reading this book, and you sort of read it linearly, which there's sort of things that occur earlier that seem to come up before. Like, all of a sudden, there's all this jellyfish stuff.
Isn't that funny? The foreshadowing is itself. I think every life is probably cinematic if you focus on it. Thusly, like, I'm going to find the storyline. So you got this big lump of life, and you chip away at it to find the sculpture. I sound really pretentious right now.
No, you don't. No, you don't. No, you don't.
You're looking for the storyline, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you wouldn't really be asked to do that otherwise. I was fascinated at the foreshadowing, just like New Orleans being foreshadowed in a New York bar. It happens all over your life. It's like, I swear that's where deja vu comes from.
Yeah, at one point you put on a shirt with the Black Widow on it, and you're bitten twice.
Yeah.
But, yeah, but you put on a shirt, so you were advertising.
Yeah, I need to go to the witch doctor. And she
yeah, people are listening to this and are sort of thinking, well, she's just using a metaphor. No.
No, she's
actually, everything she said right tonight, there's been no metaphors. That's what she did.
This is what my drummer's always telling me. Is say, when people find out your songs are all literally true, you're in so much trouble. You are not a poet. And it's true. My songs are literally true, and obviously my memoirs are literally true. But I was living in New Orleans, and I was going to this, she's a Blackfoot Indian medicine woman, really, but in our country, she's called an acupuncturist. And so I was just going to the acupuncturist. And I grabbed a T-shirt out of the attic and put it on and wore it to her place. And afterwards, on the way home, I noticed that I had two Black Widow fights, and I won't go into what happens then, but stuff.
good one, Kristen.
Stuff. I don't want to whine. I called her and said, just so you know, there's a Black Widow somewhere in your
by the way.
Room. And, yeah, she said, no, there isn't. I said, it's okay. There is. And she said, no, there isn't. It's like, what? Okay, but yes, there is. And she was right. She was arachnophobic. So, quiet, come in. She looks for spiders, and she said she's done this her whole life in every place she's ever lived or worked. And one night she went into the bathroom in the middle of the night, turned on the light, looking for spiders like she always does, and looked in the mirror, and there was one on her head
in the reflection.
She grabbed a coffee cup and hit it, but, you know, like I say, it's on her head, so she knocked herself out. And so from then on, she was making sure that there weren't any spiders anywhere in her vicinity, and she was right. I have worn it, and so I wear spiders sometimes, and this could be why I have these stupid adventures.
Kristen, we're completely out of time. I can actually talk about your book for hours.
Or spiders.
I would love to talk about spiders. I'm really... One last piece of advice, if you could give it to me. If you're playing poker with a chimp, what would you recommend?
Don't let it rip off your arms.
Oh, good one.
Yes. Kiss it instead of making it angry.
My guest tonight has been Kristen Hirsch, writer, solo artist, founding member of the bands Throwing Muses and 50 Foot Wave. And we've been talking about... And by the way, her book is so much better than even our conversation. We're talking about her latest book, Seeing Sideways, a memoir of music and motherhood. Kristen, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, sweetheart. It was great talking to you again.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.